This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and all of a sudden it's warmer now here. For a while there, it was getting very much like autumn, and now it's kind of back to early summerish. So, you know, it's been an interesting year. I do have to make one stop on the way home. I've got to get some cash because we are going out of town this weekend. We didn't celebrate our wedding anniversary back at the end of September because Lynette was busy doing some other things, and so we just put it off, and those things are out of the way now, and she actually has, this is her one free weekend. She's finished up at one church, and she's starting to work at another church now. So this is going to be our one free weekend where we're actually be free on Sunday as well. So we're going to take a little extended vacation. For us, extended, three days. Anyways, and head down to Branson and do some of the things that we've never done in Branson, kind of the old stable touristy things. There's a place called Ride the Ducks, and the ducks are amphibious vehicles. And so we've never done that before, so we thought, you know, let's just go see. And there's a show called The Bald Knobber Show. It was one of the original shows in Branson. Just good old Ozark humor. So it'll be fun. Anyway, so I just got to grab some money out of the ATM for that. So this way, if I get robbed while I'm getting the money out of the ATM, then it will be on, it'll be recorded. And I've just remembered that they moved the ATM. So I got to go down another street until I get there. I'll talk as we go. On the writing front, everything is just puttering along with that. I still have about 2 pages left. I thought I was on the last chapter, and then I got the first half of the chapter written, only to discover that the first half was long enough and had a good enough logical conclusion to it that it felt like there should really be a chapter boundary there. So I just went ahead and finished up the chapter and started another chapter. And so that's all going well. But now I'm up to the final big dramatic speech and hopefully hitting the moment at the end to make people cry. And I've got it all mapped out. The last couple of nights, I've just been putting together little pieces here and there for it and making little notations, and yes, he needs to say this, and yes, this needs to happen, yes, that needs to happen, yes, this, that, and then writing some and then making more notations as I was thinking about it. So I have, I still have the big speech to write. One of the characters has the big keystone speech that will hopefully just cap off the whole book. And now that I say that, I just happen to think that I wasn't intending to really visit the themes of the book in that keystone speech. I'm wondering if I should. Now I will have to think about that. Yes, the devices match. There's so many security things these days. Let's see, withdrawal. And from there, and we want that. Sorry. Yes, I need a printed receipt. Anyways, but that is going really well, and I'm very happy with how it's going, and I think the book's going to be fun. After I get that final chapter nailed down, then of course I'm going to need to make a loop back through, and now that I know where everybody's going and what happens in their lives and all that kind of stuff, then of course I need to start polishing. But all in all, I think we're good. I think we have, it ended up thicker than the other books, but I think it's got everything it needs to have in it, so it's going to be fun. Anyways, anything new and exciting as well this week? My wife and I this past week attended the newest church that she's going to be working at. It's a Methodist church and just seems to be lovely people. And so she's looking forward to that. She got a chance to work with her choir for the first time Wednesday night, and she was pretty excited when she came back because it sounds like she's got some musicians in her choir, people who know a little bit about music, and they seemed like nice people, and so everything seems fine. We were sad to leave the other church, but Lynette felt like it was time, and I just go where Lynette goes, so wherever you want to go, sweetie, I'll follow you. So it just works out fine. I am presently reading an extremely fascinating book called Boomerang. And the subtitle is Travels in the New Third World. It's by the same author who wrote The Big Short, which was a book about the guys who saw the financial crisis coming, the housing market implosion. They saw it coming because they had done the research and they realized what the financiers were doing with their little sleight of hand games with all the credit default swaps and derivatives and all that stuff. And they bet against the housing market. They shorted the housing market. Took out insurance policies in the form of credit default options, credit default swaps, I can't remember exactly what they're called. Took out insurance policies on the fact that if it defaulted, they would make money. And they did really well. These guys made billions with a B. For boy, billions of dollars when the credit market imploded. I mean, it was something to behold. And so there was an author who did a bunch of research, and he wrote on this, and he published this book called The Big Short. And after that did very well, then the next question he was trying to resolve is, okay, so is the problem over with now? I mean, are we actually out of the woods? Or did we just paper over the problem with a bunch of debt? And it's really interesting. What he's done here is he's actually traveled to the countries that are tottering, either tottering on the edge of sovereign insolvency, or running up to it, or have already tipped over the edge, like Iceland. So it's interesting to hear him talk about how these countries got into this situation and what's happening in the countries now. It's really fascinating. And I've been looking at all of this, trying to determine, okay, what is the wise thing to do at this point? So that's not actually what I'm going to talk about today, but I highly recommend the book, Boomerang, Travels in the New Third World. It's really good. Really, really good. The guy obviously is having some fun with the book, because this book, I think, is a little more lighthearted than some of his other stuff. He's kind of loosened up a little bit. There are some comments that are just a little bit distracting, and it's like, yeah, stop trying to be cute, just write. Right, tell me what's going on. But, you know, he's had a lot of success, and so he gets to do what he wants now, because he's had good success as an author, which is cool. That's fine. Anyways, I told you we would probably have several more episodes on the Willpower book. The book is Willpower, Rediscovering the Greatest Human Strength. And there are, I was reviewing the book, and there are other things to say on it. Today I'd like to just chat a little bit about, I think it's chapter 3, A Brief History of the To-Do List from God to Drew Carey. And I may mention one or two things out of chapter 4. But in that chapter, the authors discuss the to-do list and how that helps us with our willpower. But there's very specific things that need to be done on the to-do list to changing it into a to-done list. And it was cute. They start out the chapter talking about God and talking about how in the beginning God had a to-do list. And they imagine God making a list and going, day one, make light. You know, day two, do this. Day three, do this. Which, it's fine. You know, it's cute. It's very, very cute. One of the things they also talk about, that people who make to-do lists are typically people who are thinking ahead, who are looking towards the future and mapping things out and planning. And one of the interesting things about people who are addicted to whatever, drugs, alcohol, smoking, whatever, is typically the more confining and the more controlling the addiction is, the more it affects an individual's ability to conceptualize about the future, which this is a really interesting point. I've said for many years that one of the tasks that the flesh engages in our lives is time distortion. The flesh tries to make you live and sorrow in the past. It tries to slow you down from seeing any future for yourself by claiming that, oh, you know, you'll never be able to get over what happened in your past, or you'll never be forgiven for the things that you've done in your past. But it also tries to shove us out. It not only tries to shove us into the past to keep us from considering the future, but it also tries to shove us into the future to keep us from considering the present. And so when there's a decision that needs to be made, it likes to try to push us to, well, you know, that's really hard. You need to think about that some more. Maybe just go do this little thing that you can have some fun with this right now, and you can do that other thing tomorrow. You know, it's always trying to shove us one way or another and keep us from acting in the present. And there's actually a Hindu saying, a yogi saying, that really speaks to that. It's part of that truth that bubbles up over the world, and the saying is, be here now. And the idea is, live your life in the present. Make the decisions that you need to make now. Because honestly, now is the only time that you have to make the decisions. You can't actually make the decision tomorrow. Because by the time you get to tomorrow, and the point comes when you make the decision, that's the now. So whatever you're going to do in your life, you have to do in the now. And so it really doesn't normally do you much good to just put things off. Unless you have some sort of plan. And it looks like we have an accident. And I can't get through this way. So, rats. Let's see. I'm trying to see what we... There's an ambulance here, and there's a tow truck, and I may have to loop back here. Lots of people gawking. I don't need to be one of them. So we'll just go down this street, wherever this street takes us. I haven't been down this street in a while. Oh, maybe it connects on through. I bet it does. Okay, I think we're good. Okay, anyways, so the interesting thing is that in addicts, this time perspective is different than it is for what we consider normal people. And one of the ways that we test for these things. Let's see. No outlet. Does this truck know where he's going? I don't know that he does. We're gonna go this way, and then we're gonna go that way. I really don't have any idea where I am. One of the ways they test for this is they bring people in, and they have them sit down in front of a test, and they give them a fragment of a story, and then they say, just whatever pops into your head. When you read this fragment, just finish out the story. And so they might do things like, they will sit down, and the first part of the story is, Joe is having a cup of coffee in a restaurant. He's thinking of the time to come when. He's thinking of the time to come when. And so they say, just go ahead, just fill something out, whatever pops into your mind. Then they might give him another one. It might be something like, after awakening, Bill began to think about his future. In general, he expected to. And then you just fill out the rest of it. You could stop this if you want to try to do it just to see how you do. But what's interesting is that the first phrase is constructed in such a way that people, quote unquote, normal people, this is not a literary test. It was an experiment conducted by the scientists, gave exercise control groups. When Joe sat in the coffee shop thinking of the time to come, the typical response was that the responses covered a week in the control group. Whereas the future for Bill, control group wrote about the future, they tended to mention long-term aspirations like a doctor's appointment or a visit with relatives. It was over like a four and a half year period they would be thinking forward of what Bill was doing. So Tom, when he is just thinking of a time to come, that typically translated to a week. Bill, when he was thinking about his future, that typically translated to a time frame of 4 years, 4.5 years. They gave the same thing to a group of heroin addicts, and something very interesting happened. When it was heroin addicts that were thinking about it, heroin addicts, blah, 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 so it's, they typically covered only an hour when they were thinking of a time to come. And it was a matter of weeks is all they would think about when he was thinking about his future. In other words, for the heroin addict, the time frame of my future is only a week or two long. It's not 4 years. It's a week or two long. The time frame of thinking about what's going to come next in my life is not a week. It's an hour. Everything is shortened up. And this is what I would consider to be the activity of the flesh. So if when you are thinking about something that's coming up in your life, if all you're thinking about is what's going to be happening in the next hour, you really need to kind of look at your life and figure out if there's something that's drastically shortening your time frames. Because just as off the cuff and just, you know, what are you going to be doing soon? Well, that should be kind of getting interpreted as, a time to come. What are you going to be doing in a time to come? That should be getting interpreted longer than an hour in your mind. You should be looking forward. And if you are looking forward farther than that, and if you want to get that organized, then, of course, one of the ways to do that is with a to-do list. I have mentioned before, one of the big to-do list methodologies is a program called Getting Things Done, or GTD. And there was a really interesting story in the book about Drew Carey, who was just overwhelmed all the time. He had seen the Getting Things Done book, and he thought it was really cool, but he could never get it to work. And then finally, one day, he thought to himself, you know what? I'm rich. And so he just called up the author and said, okay, how much is it going to cost me for you to come and sit beside me and help me do this? And the guy quoted him a price, and he said, okay, come. And so on and off for the next year, the author of Getting Things Done actually flew to where Drew Carey was and sat with him and helped him through it. And he eventually did get to the place where his inbox was clean, and he's been trying to keep up with it and said he's been doing pretty well keeping up with it. And they talk about when you get to that place where you actually have things in a system that you trust, that it really relieves you of stress, which is an interesting point that we're going to get to here in a little bit. Not that everything is done, but simply having them in a system relieves you of stress. That's really fascinating. Now, I don't know how much he had to pay the guy. The authors do make a side comment at one point later on to the effect of $20,000 a day that this guy gets from executives. So I would imagine it was in something in that kind of a ballpark. And I would imagine it was something where this guy flew in for a couple of days to get Drew Carey started and then would come back one or two times a month to help him and help him keep it moved along, you know, and yada, yada, yada. But that was valuable for Drew Carey, because for someone who's trying to write comedy, if you've got the phone on is blinking because you've got messages and you've got emails pounding you and you've got a whole stack of papers on your desk you're supposed to go through, I mean, it just kills your productivity and kills your creativity. And so it was worth that to Drew Carey to get to that point. Now then, from what they say in the book, the thing that I really found interesting was that the stress relief does not come from simply doing everything. The stress release comes from making a plan that you will implement. You're putting it into a system that you trust, and you've trained yourself to use the system. Now that's fascinating to me, because some of the requirements is that, first of all, you have a system that you know works, so you believe in it, you know it to be true. In the case of the Getting Things Done system, it's a series of folders. Whether they're virtual folders or physical folders, it doesn't really matter. And it's a method of quantifying things to get them in the right folders, whether it's something that's going to be done this month or whether it's something that's going to be put off for several months. There are 31 folders that are daily folders for any given month, and then there are 12 folders behind that that are monthly folders for the next 12 months after the current month. And every day, your job is to empty that folder that is today's folder. Now, the ways you empty it are, if it's a task that takes 2 minutes or less, you don't put it in a folder. You just do it because it takes 2 minutes or less. If it's a task that you need someone else to do something before you can accomplish the task, you delegate it. And then you put in a note of when you're going to check back with that person to see if they've done it. If it's a task that you really need to be put off until you can get it scheduled someplace else, you can defer it. If it's a task that you know you're never really going to get to it, I mean, it's not going to happen, then in that case, you dump it. So you either do it, delegate it, defer it, or you dump it. That's just a really quick overview of Getting Things Done. It's not the mechanism that makes getting things done magic, though. And this is what they brought out in the book that I thought was fascinating. It's the fact that people trust the system, that they actually work the system, and they actually do what they're supposed to do every day to make the system work. What happens at that point is that it doesn't really matter how many things you have coming up, as long as they're categorized and in the right places, people's stress goes down. Now that's fascinating. And they've actually done tests concerning to-do lists and willpower, and how that if you don't have everything in a system, that will just gnaw on you and gnaw on you and take away from your willpower and wear you out. I'm getting my mail, by the way. But as soon as you get everything classified into a system that you trust, that disappears. Now, I think there's a couple of things that you have to do in order for that to be true. I think as I've already said, you really have to believe in the system. And you really have to do the work. You can't just believe in the system, put the stuff in there, and then never pull anything out of the folders and not do it, because you're not going to get away from the stress that way. And here's the reason I think you're not going to get away from the stress. I'm backing into my garage. You're not going to get away from the stress because the truth of the matter is that most of your stress, not all, but most of your stress is coming from your flesh. Your flesh is chewing on you and chewing on you because it knows it can get traction on that issue. It knows it's something that bothers you. One of the really interesting things about the interaction of the flesh in our lives is it doesn't bug us about stuff that doesn't bother us. You know, I mean, I've had great loves in my life and I have lost some of them. But when I got to the point and got through that grief process and I was done with it, or I wasn't grieving over it anymore, the flesh is not going to keep pounding it. It might try to bring it up every once in a while and say, oh, you know, so-and-so. Don't say like, yeah, I don't care. And then it quits. It just quits. I think the same thing applies when it comes to the tasks that we need to do in life. If it's something that we know we're not doing our best on, that we know we're procrastinated about, that's where the flesh can get traction. But you don't necessarily have to do everything immediately to relieve the stress. All you have to do is get it into a condition where you believe it will get done when it needs to get done. And you're actually true in that belief. You're not trying to con yourself into believing that you're actually going to get it done when it's going to get done. But you know that even though you're not doing it today, you've made a decision, I will do that X, and you will actually do it X. And people use the getting things done system to get to that point, but you don't necessarily need the getting things done system to get to that point. I have a thing called Remember the Milk that I use, that I put reminders on. And it performs that function for me because I know when that reminder goes off, I'm going to do what it says to do. And because I know that that will happen and it's true, the flesh knows it can't get traction on it, and so it leaves me alone about that. And so in your struggles with stress, the truth of the matter is, I think, is that when we get under stress, when we get worried and anxious about things, the only reason the flesh is able to pound us about those things is because there's some kind of disconnect in our belief. And if you can get that disconnect repaired, you can relieve yourself of the anxiety and the stress. I'm on a project now where I'm working with a new technology. And this week kind of ran into a, little problem. Had to get it resolved. Felt like I was just spinning my wheels for several hours, and I don't like doing that because I'm spending the client's money. I spun my wheels for long enough to realize that if I was going to keep going at it this way, I was really going to keep spinning my wheels. So I handed off to somebody else because it was out of my purview. I spun off, went off, and got something else done that really needed to get done. And even though this thing was quote-unquote hanging over my head, I knew I had handed off to capable people. We'd get it figured out. Certainly the flesh was trying to go, you know, you might not get it figured out, and then this whole thing's going to be like, okay, but it wasn't getting much traction because I was like, no, God's helped us thus far. Everything's going to be fine. And it looks like we don't have it completely resolved, but it looks like we found where the problem was. When I get back in on Monday, I expect to do some tests and pada-bing, hey, woohoo, you know, there it goes. In addition to that, I was able to get something done that I had actually specced out for 40 hours, and I was actually able to get it done in 15 hours or so. And so I just gained back 25 hours on the project that I can use other places. So I was like, woohoo, so that was good too. And so that just helps as well. I say all that to say, when it comes to outstanding tasks in your life, when it comes to lining things up to get things done, whatever process you invoke, if you lie to yourself, if you try to bargain with the future, if you aren't honest, the flesh is just going to grind you on that. But if you hold yourself to a standard of when I say I'm going to do X now, I'm going to, you can actually delegate out a bunch of stuff into the future. And yet, even though it's not actually done, the stress will pull off. Because as soon as you're really true to yourself about those things, the flesh will quit bugging you about it. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.